or privileged to have as our speaker this morning Dr. Helmar Junghans. Dr. Junghans is one of the foremost authorities on the Reformation, working in East Germany today. Dr. Junghans is editor of the Luther Yearbook. He holds the position of Dozent für Kirchengeschichte at the Karl Marx University in Leipzig, and is a member of several research societies, the Continuation Committee of the International Congress for Luther Research, and of the Martin Luther Committee of the German Democratic Republic. His publications include Allgemeine Leute der Neuen Forschung, Wittenberg aus Lutherstadt, Die Reformation in Augenzeugenberichten, as well as articles on a variety of topics. He is responsible for the compilation of the publications on Luther, which appear annually in the Luther Yearbook, which is one of the major tools for Luther research. Dr. Junghans' topic this morning is the later Luther. Let us give Dr. Junghans a warm welcome.
Interpreting the Alter Luther, 1526 to 1546. Whether it is meaningful to see Luther's life after 1526 under the headline of the Alter Luther, we'll try to find out later. First of all, I should be stated that whoever treats Luther's life between 1526 and 1546 need not complain about a lack of sources. In the Weimar edition of Luther's works, volumes 19 through 54, or every April. That means 43 volumes, some of them being divided into several parts. In Luther's correspondence, one can trace Luther's thoughts and actions after 1526 as collected in volumes 4 to 12. His table talks in 6 volumes covers the years 1529 to 1546. Even the section Deutsche Bibel of the Weimar edition mostly date from the years since 1526. Indeed, two-thirds of Luther's work handed down to us date from the last period of his life. They all bear witness to a continuous productive power of the Reformer. On the other hand, the amount of research published since 1918 is rather scarce as to the later period of Luther's life. Less than one-third deals with Luther's life and work after the German Peasant War. Indeed, some of Luther's later works have been investigated several times, for instance, his discussion with Zwingli, the Bekenntnisschriften, that is, the statement about the doctrine on the church. But on the whole, the Luther research of the 20th century has been concerned first with Luther's developing into a reformer and with the early period of his life. On the other hand, as to the later period of Luther's life, for which there is an abundance of source material, there is a surprising scarcity of published research. Therefore, a team of theologians concerned with research on history of the Reformation, which came together once a year in one of the Luther's towns in the German Democratic Republic, is working on a commemorative publication for the Luther year 1983. That is restricted to Luther's life from 1526 to 1546. The well-known Luther biography of Köstlin and Carverau has to be revised and enlarged. More than 40 authors have cooperated. The manuscript is now complete, and we cherish to hope that this publication will be at hand at the Luther Jubilee in 1983. And that this will encourage others to work on the later Luther. Now we must ask whether there are relevant reasons to talk about an older Luther and to draw the line at the year 1526. Part 1. the periodization of Luther's life. Heinrich Böhmer's famous Luther biography, entitled The Young Luther and published 1925, ended with Luther's sojourn at the Wartburg. There Luther lived to see his 38th birthday on the 10th of November, 1521. Even nowadays, one is not considered young with 38. For the 16th century, this classification is even less helpful, the general life expectancy being so much lower than today. For most people, the young Luther is a Luther before the posting of the thesis in 1517, even if that makes him only younger by 4 years. Only his Reformation theology was young at that time. Much could be said for labeling only the period of his life until entering the monastery in 1505 as the period of the young Luther. But it would not be worthwhile to try to introduce a new usage. Anyway, we should always bear in mind that the expression the young Luther should be applied more to the Luther as a reformer than to Luther as a young man, and that he in no way could be called a case for a youth psychologist. After Böhmer's untimely death, Bornkamm took up to continue Böhmer's biography of Luther. Accordingly, entitled his book Martin Luther in the Middle of His Life. It covers Luther's life until 1530. Bornkamm intended, but unfortunately it was not granted to him, to continue the story until 1532, the year when the Edict of Worms was mooted but not voided. It is without a doubt a sensible periodization, and we take it as a basis for a Luther's legal status within the German Empire. When we follow Böhmer, the concept of the young Luther covers even the Worms Edict of 1521, when Luther was outlawed. The following years have been made difficult by the repeated demand of the Roman Catholic Church to put into effect this edict, which stopped being enforced in Luther's later years. Beyond any doubt, this threat was not unimportant for Luther. But was the Edict of Worms really so important for him that a periodization from this point of view is of any great help for the understanding of Luther's life? Were indeed the reaction of Pope and Emperor more important for Luther than his own spiritual and theological experiences? It is entirely possible to center our periodization on Luther's reformatory achievement. That would result in three major divisions. A, the origin of reformatory message. The first period covers Luther's development before he published his new insights for a wider public. The so-called Turm Erlebnis, the well-known episode of the tower, is not really suited for a caesura of Luther's life into a pre-reformatory and a reformatory period. First of all, we cannot fix a day when Luther was overwhelmed by his new understanding of God's justice. At least, Luther research has not reached unanimity about the exact date. On the other hand, such a division would be obscure the fact that Luther did not transform overnight from a scholastic into a reformer, nor change his theology from one day to the other. In fact, he detached himself rather slowly from the scholastic tradition as he more and more applied the philological method developed by the biblical humanist to his exegesis. His now understanding of the message of the Bible permeated his interpretation of the gospel and thus developed his understanding of the new reformatory message. There have been high points and surprising discoveries which deeply moved Luther, but we may be sure that these discoveries have new horizons, represent a development which had already begun in Erfurt. Luther did not deliberately look for a definite answer, but came to it against his own expectations. This process may be described with the abstract word development. Later, indeed, it was evident for Luther that God himself was the cause of this process. This formation of the reformatory theology led to a disputation in September 1517 that was a direct attack against scholastic theology and which was the signal that the basic concepts of a new theology had manifested themselves. B. The demand for reformation. When on the 31st of October 1517, Luther sent his 19.5 theses concerning indulgences to Albrecht of Brandenburg, Archbishop of Magdeburg and Mainz, a new epoch in his life began. Up to that date, Luther had reported his insights to his students or discussed them with friends. Now he called on the Archbishop, his religious superior, to withdraw the instructions for the granting of indulgences and to oblige the preachers of indulgences to a different approach. With that, Luther put forward a substantial demand that in fact intended an alteration of the church. The ensuing trial against Luther incited him to new demands of reform that necessarily shook the church and its foundation. At the same time, he was reluctant to introduce these challenges himself. He at first expected them to come from the ecclesiastic in question, and after 1520 from the secular authorities. Luther welcomed all Christians which on their own broke with the medieval church, but he firmly opposed all those who in his understanding attempt to found a new evangelical church in an unauthorized, overly legalistic as well as premeditated manner, and who wanted to force it upon others. See the realization of the Reformation. In the third period, Luther personally implements the Reformation as an organizer and in the outside world. On the 9th of October 1524, he takes off his monk's habit and reads his sermon in a plague gown. He demands the end of the mass in the Schlosskirche at Wittenberg. On the 13th of June 1525, he marries and thus breaks the papal law of celibacy against which he has preached and written 4 years. In this context, the death of the Elector Frederick the Wise on the 5th of May 1525 was of important consequence for Luther himself. This prince had freely tolerated the preaching of the reformatory message and the defection of some of his subjects from late medieval piety or even the papal law. So monks and nuns openly were leaving their monasteries. Now, the prince's brother and successor, John the Constant, had decided to support the Reformation in his territories, including new organizational forms. During his rule, well-organized church inspections launched the establishment of an evangelical church. As a result of the imperial policy, unexpectedly, the Diet of Speyer facilitated the establishment of the new church. But Luther is now overwhelmed with responsibilities and disappointment. To me, they seem to mark this period of his life to such as an extent that I think we should look at Luther's life from this aspect and provide this last period with the heading the older Luther. Of course, not every new period in history brings with it something altogether new, and all problems do not evaporate overnight. Even before 1526, Luther continues to base the expansion of the Reformation on the preaching of the gospel. But something new in the focal point. Thus we are entitled to put a caesura at the introduction of the German Mass in the fall of 1525. When on the New Year's Day, 1526, the German Mass left the printer's press, it hinted to the public that in Wittenberg the Reformation was about to take its special form of organization. Part 2. The unfolding of reformatory theology. The formidable work of the later Luther is not merely a repetition of what he had written before 1526. Therefore, we should consider the proportion of Luther's earlier output to the later one. Let me describe this relation as an unfolding. When choosing this word, I want to avoid the word development, as it could easily contribute to the misconception that Luther developed a theological system out of a definite theological insight, a theological system where all statements were closely associated. This approach is incorrect for two reasons. On the one hand, it assumes that Luther made use of the scholastic method when he wrote down his theological statements. Still, it is well known that he resolutely fought against this brand of theology. On the other hand, we must keep in mind the fact that the idea of a unified system in philosophy and theology has developed only within the last 200 years. Whenever research stuck to the idea that one had to look for such system in earlier time, it ran into misjudgment. In fact, Luther in his theology never argued by means of philosophical logic, but tried to understand the Holy Scriptures in their entirety. So he centered around certain insights that for him were essentially the gospel. Thus, Luther's theology can no more be a uniform system than the biblical tradition can be looked at as one. Now we turn to the term unfolding. Let me take the liberty to interpret this term. Think of a long and broad strip of paper that is folded up. Now Luther is a writer, respectively the painter, who fills sheet after sheet. These sheets are by no means alike. They are marked by religious experiences, biblical texts or works of tradition, creeds of the early church, inquiries of friends, attacks of enemies, and historical events. Day by day, demands, even provocations, are unfolded in front of Luther, and he covers these sheets with his answers. He does it in quite different ways. He chooses indistinct colors when he himself is still searching and questioning. He uses soft colors when he comforts or invites us to participate in the gospel. He sketched in lively colors to make people realize their problems, and he sketched with rough strokes and in the deepest black when he fights against his enemies, above all against the devil. And in that manner, A long folding map is about to unfold, where about 800 sheets are covered with publications. About 2,500 are covered with sermons, and over 3,000 with letters, and all have been written by Luther himself. Today, this long map is unfolded to all of us, and it reveals a multicolored picture. And just as in a giant folder, all the different maps are attached to each other. Evidently, Luther has created this diversified opus out of some fundamental insights of reformatory theology. Indeed, there is essentially no disagreement between the young and the old Luther, as we have emphasized several times. He, who wants to reduce Luther's statements to a few abstract findings, will put aside many ideas of the later Luther as insignificant. In fact, however, this diversity represents a great abundance. Whoever interprets the text of the major Luther should not only ask for the central ideas, but will have to take seriously the motives of any single publication, as well as its historical background. That is, he should check closely the respective sleeve of the folded map and work out identities with and differences to former statements on the same set of problems, and try to find out in which way, by this unfolding of his theology, Luther's enlarged, differentiated, or even corrected his former insights. And some examples. Word and order. The young Luther felt it to be his most important task to understand God's word in the right way, that is, to liberate it from the scholastic interpretation and so discover the true gospel. And this is what he first wanted to tell the public, with all the consequences that this implied. But when in 1522, under the leadership of Andreas Bodenstein from Karlstadt, the town council of Wittenberg introduced a new church order, Luther strongly opposed it. He reduced the contrast between his ideas and the deeds of the Wittenbergers to the formula, by means of the word, not by force. But as Luther became older, he felt that sometimes one had to rally on force. We have to take notice, however, that for him force meant the universal accepted order and not just execution of punishment. When with the help of the Saxon electors, the evangelical church was established, political authorities set to work in order to guarantee the security and the functioning of the church. Otherwise, the property of the church would have been threatened to be completely taken over by nobility and by the cities, and thus lost for the church, for the schools, and for the support of the poor. In this way, not only the property questions were settled, but at the same time, unorthodox and unqualified priests were evicted. So this was done with utmost discretion. Did the older Luther act contrary to the Luther before 1526? Or has he only unfolded former ideas? Luther was so elated about the discovery of the gospel of God's charity that it seemed to him natural that everybody else would gladly accept the gospel. The rapid spreading of his publications, the vast movement they aroused, seemed to justify him. However, the inspections showed that the masses were by no means elated by the message of the Reformation. Quite a few liberated themselves from their obligations towards the papal church, but did not work for the new church. No longer could Luther explain the election of a new minister as founded upon the desire of the congregation to obtain a preacher of the gospel. Rather, he addressed the territorial princes and held them that they, as the most important members of each parish, had the obligation to provide for the spiritual care of the congregation. Luther conceded to them the right to force the communities to support a minister. Had he thus abandoned his principle by the word, not by force? Not at all. Such authority is concerned only with providing the essential conditions for the preaching of the gospel. Indeed, Luther did not want to force every single person to live in a definite Christian way, for he knew that only the Holy Spirit can renew men. Therefore, till the end of his life, Luther combined his demand with a warning against establishing new church orders. The course he had once followed led him still further, when within the evangelical church, certain people showed up who contradicted to Wittenberg theologians. He knew leaf had been turned over. Luther now acted in two different ways. On the one hand, he fought with his tracts against such doctrines as seemed to him false and dangerous for the soul, especially when these, in his opinion, erroneous ideas were widely publicized. In his immediate surroundings, he also used political authority. On the other hand, he did not aim to force people to stick to a certain theology, but he wanted to protect the recently founded church from false doctrines and as well from separations and destructions. Experience had taught Luther that not everyone could be converted to his theology by means of speech, by the word. So in 1532, in his publication von den Fleischern und Winkelpredigern, he demanded that all those who preached without proper ordination be reported to the spiritual and secular authorities in order that thus could be called to task and, if necessary, expelled. He did not demand heretics to be killed, forcing them either to convert to the Lutheran creed or to die. But he took certain precautions in order to protect the new congregations under a special responsibility. This responsibility motivates him increasingly after 1526, also in varying degrees. In some territories, he would tolerate differing trends as long as these did not lead the congregations into errors, as for instance the special feature of the Bohemian Brethren. The Trinitarian theology. When interpreting the sententiae of Petrus Lombardus, 15:9, the young Luther felt it necessary to work on the Trinitarian doctrine. So he studied this doctrine in the works of Hilary of Poitiers and Augustine. Later, it became less important to him. On the one hand, the issue did not arouse his opposition. On the other hand, all intensive scholastic speculation about the Trinity did not seem pertinent to be included into evangelical preaching. Thus, in his attack on scholastic speculation, he ended in neglecting the Trinitarian doctrine. Nevertheless, Luther always accepted the Trinity and included it more and more into his theology, as Rainer Janssen in his Studien zu Luther den Trinitätslehre has shown. A special accusation offered itself in the interpretation of the Apostles' Creed and the Sermon on Trinity Sunday. Since about 1520, Luther felt that the doctrine of the Trinity should be derived from the Holy Scriptures only and not from any speculation. As a result, the Apostles' Creed, that formerly had been divided into 12, respectively 14 statements, was now put into three articles. And each of these he underlined by a characteristic term, which to a certain extent he found only after years of searching: creation, redemption, sanctification. When in the course of the aforementioned church visitations, it became evident that the general knowledge of the evangelical theology was indeed very limited, Luther wrote the small and the large catechism, both printed in 1529. Luther did not compose Lotsi Communis, like Melanchthon had done in 1521. He did not try to build his church into an all-encompassing system, but he developed his insights for the believers by interpreting certain texts: the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, the Order of Baptism, the words of the Holy Communion. In his catechism, however, he interpreted the Apostles' Creed under the viewpoint of creation, redemption, and sanctification. This way, Luther made the Trinitarian thought an integral part of his message to the new congregation. Luther had at that point confined himself to stress the acting of God himself within the Trinity. After having inserted the doctrine of the Trinity into the structure of the new church, Luther asked himself here too how the new congregations are to be held together. He increasingly gained the impression that this doctrine was vital in recognizing and in refuting false doctrines. Therefore, since 1538, he began to publish on these questions more intensively. Luther's ideas on the Trinitarian doctrine help us to understand the unfolding of his theology. We should not look at Luther's use of this doctrine and its integration into the Bekenntnisschriften only as an outward or even tactical step to avoid attacks from the Roman Church. Luther had indeed, since his stay in Erfurt, deep insights into the Trinitarian doctrine of the early Church. But he developed it only as far as it was essential for the foundation and establishment of the evangelical church. It would be a real simplification of Luther's theology to base it on the young Luther and to declare that reformatory theology did away with the doctrine of the Trinity. Interpretations of the later Luther always have to take into account Luther's underlying motivation. See the battle of the two realms. A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he armed the float of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe does seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. The best known of Luther's hymns was probably composed in 1528. Wittenberg seemed to be threatened with danger. Since 1526, its medieval fortifications had been adapted to the new war technique. Luther did not think highly of it, since he believed that weapons never can defend God's word and need not to do it. For him, God is the mighty fortress, a safe stronghold. This hymn is a poetical expression of Luther's vision of history. He has not invented it. Already in Augustine's works, it plays an important role. The history of the world, it seems, as a battle between the realms of God and the realms of Satan. As early as 59, Luther had studied Augustine's De Civitate Dei, the work in which this father of the church stated his vision of history. Already at the early period, Luther made statements based on Augustine's view. But the importance increases the more he realizes that preaching in gospel incited attacks from many quarters. Everywhere he perceived Satan at work. He became aware to Satan even within himself. So he mentioned his headache from which he suffered at Coburg Castle in 1530 and wrote that he didn't know whether it was caused by the Satan or by the old wine. To him, the Anabaptists seemed to be led astray by the devil. Therefore, in 1528, he opposed their being killed, as they had already been punished enough for their errors. And he added that it was indeed very easy for the devil to catch people. Luther did not want to bedevil any people. He wanted to open the eyes of men about the battle of the two realms in order to shield them from the temptation of Satan. And in this spiritual battle, the weapons are God's word, the sermon, and the prayer. At times, this vision of history arose in Luther's apocalyptic fears. They caused his harsh speech against Turks, Jews, and Papists, all in his eyes combat troops of the devil, and may be compared with the menacing sermon of the prophets of the Old Testament. Part 3. The wealth of the work of the altar Luther. In his work, Luther and the False Brethren, Mark Edwards referred to the judgment of Heinrich Bullinger, who characterized Luther's efforts in his Gegen Hans Wurst in 1541 as unbecoming, completely immodest, entirely scurrilous, and frivolous. This judgment should not be understood as opinion of a humanist about someone who is not considered a humanist, about a coarse fellow, less so as a portrayal of the later Luther. This very judgment should entice us to reconsider the interpretation of the works of the altar Luther. Luther attacked Duke Henry of Braunschweig-Wolfenbüttel. He is called a typical man of the Renaissance, full of activity, greed of power, and without any scruples, in the Geschichte der deutschen Länder, published at 1964. Henry suppressed the Protestant movement in his territories. In 1538, he had a quarrel with the Elector of Saxony and the Landgrave of Hesse. Polemic pamphlets were exchanged. At first, Luther kept silent, giving voice to his opinion in letters only. Then Henry challenged him, declaring that Luther had called his elector a Hanswurst. Now Luther also took up his pen. That happened in 1541. Now, it seems to me typical of Luther that he in no way rushed into the battle, eager to fight. He was not at all frivolous. This attitude we can trace through all his life. As early as 1516, saw the difference between himself and Erasmus of Rotterdam. Only in 1525, after Erasmus had publicly challenged him, Luther made himself heard with his treatise against Erasmus. Scott Hendricks just showed in an essay on Luther and Albrecht of Mainz, which is to appear in the Luther Jahrbuch 1982, how long Luther hesitated to attack the Archbishop of Mainz in public. He did it as late as 1538, when it could no longer be doubted that Albrecht of Mainz had to be blamed for the death of Hans of Schönes. For a long time, Luther looked calmly, even full of distrust, at the efforts of Martin Bucer to enforce the Wittenberger Concordia of 1536 in the south of Germany and in Switzerland. When Luther saw his suspicion verified, he appeared before the public in 1544 with his kurzes Bekenntnis vom Heiligen Sacrament, as he did not want to share the guilt for a false understanding of the Holy Communion. Even the exit pamphlets against the papacy appeared only towards the end of his life, when the preparation for a church council had led nowhere, and the Pope claimed anew his supreme authority over the emperor. All these pamphlets had not been published in a frivolous manner, but Luther gave vent to his anger in a criticism delayed for a long time. In such cases, everyone runs the risk to growing vehement. Was Luther gegen Hans Wurst really completely immodest? In this publication proof that Luther was a course fellow and far remote from the humanist mode of expression? I do not believe that this view helps us to understand Luther. In 1516, the first part of the Epistulae Obscurorum Virorum appeared, in which the effort humanist Crotus Rupianus exposed monasticism to ridicule. At that time, Luther felt the mode of expression of this publication unsuitable to the topic. Apparently, humanists had many modes of expression at their disposal. But let us return to gegen Hans Wurst. It was the Duke Henry himself who supplied Luther with this catchword. Now indeed, Luther did attack Henry's life steal, but Henry had previously disparaged the contact of the Elector of Saxony. In her memory, while in fact she lived with Henry in a hideaway at a castle, through Duke Henry's wife was still alive. All these details were known to Luther. To understand this pamphlet, we must follow the method of the Swedish scholar Birgit Stolt, who investigated metaphorical usage in the militant pamphlets between Hieronymus Emser and Luther. We have to check which rhetoric form the pamphlets against Luther were taken over by him in his publication. We should be aware that since his university years, Luther was well versed in humanistic rhetoric and made use of it with skill and seeming with pleasure. Whether it uses overstatement or understatement, we should never take Luther's text at face value. But gegen Hans Wurst was it really unbecoming. In 1521, George Held called Duke Henry a tyrant. Lutheranism has often been reproached with an uncritical attitude towards rulers and with having raised nothing but submissive subjects. Even Luther himself has been reprimanded through the ages. Indeed, in later editions of Luther's works, published after his death, quite a few of his criticisms of rulers were omitted. So interpreting gegen Hans Wurst gives us a welcome occasion to oppose a partisan view of Luther as a docile servant of princes. Bullinger felt that modesty, prudence, piety, and gravity would be more convenient for theologians. Regrettably, Luther could have struck a more pastoral note, for instance, in his pamphlets against the peasants. Whether this note would have been appropriate in a pamphlet against the tyrant Henry, who had already proved unamenable, seems to me questionable. Indeed, not all of the tracts gegen Hans Wurst consists of verbose attacks. It contains important statements about the characteristics of the true church and an interesting description of the expansion of the Reformation. Above all, it was written in the conviction that the attacks of Duke Henry once more bear witness to the fact that the Church of Wittenberg suffers the persecution prophesied by Christ. Here, too, Luther mentions the battle of the two realms. Now we are not required to think highly of everything which ever came out of Luther's pen. But the words that irritate us should not cloud our sight, and we should be aware that Luther, up to the end of his life, kept writing booklets of comfort, pastoral letters, and even a hymn in praise of music. It is true that he could be severe against all those which in his opinion had a false understanding of the Holy Scriptures, and there he felt encouraged by his friends in Wittenberg. We should not overlook that even on his deathbed, he was aware that in his understanding of the gospel he felt being a beggar. We are only now beginning to discover the wealth concealed in the works of the older Luther, and to appreciate his devotion to the build-up and keep-up of the new church. Luther himself thought most highly of his contribution. It is the translation of the Bible, the Catechism, the Hymnal, and the Prayer Book. Is the older Luther appealing? I am sure he is. Certainly, the battles in his early period, with their clear-cut attacks against Catholicism and Rome, are more impressive and easier to grasp. But as a rule, the actual life of most men can be more easily compared to the life of the older Luther. Ministers are dealing with congregations where religious questions are not at the center, as it had been the case in the early years of the Reformation. For their works, they can learn more from the older Luther, and for historical research too. It is high time to turn more thoroughly to the study of the events between 1525 and 1555.
Thank you for a very stimulating presentation. Dr. Junghan says he will be happy to answer any questions that you might have. However, he would like to answer in German and also to have the questions in German. And therefore, we've asked Professor Rosine to serve as kind of an interpreter. And if you will ask your questions deliberately and very clearly. Questions?
getting off the subject at hand for a moment, I was wondering if Professor Johann could explain to us a little bit about the preparations that are going on for the celebration of Luther's anniversary at 83.
I had a frog in direct here that contained the river of isn't that plus you for Vorbereitung for 1983. Was sie das tun?
Ein weites Feld. Ich will es gerne beantworten, aber wenn es noch Fragen zu dir.
Yeah, can we wait a minute and see if there's some other questions about some other things? This is a broad topic. Other things direct to the paper? One question talking about, and from my own experience in dealing and having several friends who are Jews, you seem to be very familiar with Luther's comments in his later years about the Jews, but not too familiar with the rest of his theology. I was wondering exactly in what sense does the professor see Luther's later statements against the Jews in this context of the battle of good and evil? Does he see Luther directing this directly towards the Jews as people, or as more as a personalization of an anti-Christian, philosophy, but an anti-Christian message or an anti-gospel message? More or less, is it depersonalized or personalized for Luther in these later years?
Also zunächst in den ersten Jahren der Reformation hat Luther sehr freundlich über die Juden geschrieben.
Alright, first of all, he wrote very positively over the Jews at the beginning of the Reformation.
Er war der Meinung, die Juden haben das Evangelium nur deshalb nicht angenommen, weil es die Scholastiker verdorben hatten.
And the Jews early on simply hadn't accepted the gospel yet because the Scholastics had so clouded the issue that they didn't see it.
Aber genauso wie er große Enttäuschungen mit den Gemeinden hatte, so hatte er sie dann auch in Bezug auf die Juden. Genauso wie er große Enttäuschung mit den Gemeinden erlebte, dass sie also das Evangelium nicht so annahmen.
Even as he experienced disenchantment, that the gospel didn't simply run free and convert all people, so also he had disenchantment that the Jews didn't accept the message as time went on.
Vor allem ist auch eindeutig, er kämpft gegen den Glauben der Juden, niemals gegen die Juden als Rasse.
Above all, you have to remember, he fought against the Jews because of their belief and not because of a racist, anti-Semitic.
Am Ende seines Lebens hat dann noch ein Rabbiner eine Schrift verfasst und nachgewiesen, dass Luther das Alte Testament nicht richtig versteht.
And at the end of his life, Luther had this tract from a rabbi that tried to show that Luther didn't understand the Old Testament properly.
Da war seine Geduld erschöpft.
Patience is lost, I guess. He lost patience at that point with the Jews.
Und dann richten sich diese Schriften eben dagegen, dass diese jüdische Theologie die Heilige Schrift falsch auslegt.
And at that point, then he lashes out against the Jews and says the Jews don't understand the Holy Scriptures in the proper sense.
Und in diesem Zusammenhang stellt Luther dann die Juden mit den Türken und dem Papst zusammen.
And in that context, the Jews fall into the same category with the Turks and with the Papists.
Die Zusammenstellung Papisten, Türken und Juden kommt dann sehr häufig.
Yeah, and then the grouping Jews, Turks and Papists comes very often. You see that regularly in his writing.
Er bekämpft sie also als Feinde des Evangeliums und als Feinde des Reiches Gottes.
And then fights against them as an enemy of the gospel and an enemy of the kingdom of God. Okay. Other questions? Please. Yeah, Don?
How strong of a hand did Luther take in helping to get the church organized? You have the Reformation and the church is beginning to grow. Mm-hmm. What kind of a administrative hand or organizational hand did Luther have in the development of the church?
Yeah, also wie ernst die Organisation?
Ja, wie tief hat er mit sich mit Verwaltung und Organisation beschäftigt?
Ja. Also die Organisation war für Luther immer untergeordnet.
The organization was never of primary importance. It was of secondary importance.
Sie hat die Aufgabe, zu garantieren, dass das Evangelium gepredigt wird.
The important thing was to guarantee that the gospel would be preached.
Und deshalb kann in seiner Zeit auch die bürgerliche Gemeinde auffordern, das zu garantieren.
And so he could demand at that point the citizens, the communities should guarantee that the gospel would be preached as well.
Das hat nichts damit zu tun, dass die Politiker Einfluss auf den Inhalt der Verkündigung erhalten sollten.
That's not to mean that the politicians therefore should interject themselves and influence the proclamation of the gospel.
Luther war auch nie der Meinung, dass eine bestimmte Kirchenverfassung von Gott eingesetzt ist und die allein richtige ist.
He was never of the opinion that there is one church organization or structure that is so ordained by God and must be instituted and used.
Er war auch bereit, die mittelalterliche Kirchenorganisation zu dulden, wenn sie die evangelische Predigt duldet.
He was willing to keep the medieval structure provided the gospel would be properly preached.
Man kann zusammenfassen, die Kirchenorganisation, die Verkündigung des Evangeliums am besten fördert in jeder Zeit, das ist die richtige.
In short, or in summary, the point is that whatever organization best serves for the proclamation of the gospel, that's the organization that you ought to have. And what that is doesn't really make much difference.
Mm-hmm. I understood you to say that Luther, as he unfolded his ideas, came to the conclusion that the gospel shouldn't be forced on people, but that the structures which enable the gospel to be preached might be forced by those in control of areas where there were true Christian churches formed. Did he ever say anything about what the governmental structures should do or what they should be like in areas where there were not such congregations that were holding to the true gospel, but where the government might be inclined to support the Reformation?
Glaube ist nicht Pflicht, aber die Regierung kann das Glauben verteidigen. Aber was passiert, wenn es in einer Gemeinde oder in einem Gebiet keine christliche Gemeinde, aber der Führer will das haben, kann er das Pflicht machen und kann er das von oben unten?
Ja. Also nach Luthers Meinung ist ein weltlicher Regent auch für das Seelenheil verpflichtet. Sich zu kümmern, dass Seelenheil untergeht.
The prince is also considered responsible to care for the spiritual oversight of the population, of the people. He should also be concerned about that sort of thing as well.
Er hat also die Pflicht, dafür zu sorgen, dass ein Prediger bezahlt wird, dass die Jugend mit dem Christentum bekannt gemacht wird, auch wenn diese Gemeinden das nicht wünschen.
And he's obligated also to make sure that the preachers are paid and put there and that the youth are given the opportunity, are brought up and educated in the Christian things, even when the community is not of a mind so to do that. That is to say, to pay the people and to institute educational reform.
Aber diese Predigt soll immer eine Predigt des einladenden Wortes Gottes sein.
Mm-hmm. But the preaching that should be done then should be invitational, to try and draw the people to them rather than obligatory.
Es soll keiner gezwungen werden, das auch zu bekennen, weil, wie Luther sagt, auf diese Weise nur Heuchler entstehen, aber keine Christen.
And you cannot compel belief, because that only leads to hypocrisy. Those people then who so believe and confess are only hypocrites, because they're forced into the belief. Another one?
A question of clarification. Mm-hmm. Then would you say that Luther would support the idea that even in a non-Christian society, a society that had become basically non-Christian, it would still be good if Christians could influence, in their influence of the government, could have the government support Christian institutions, Christian preaching as such? In other words, a modification of what some people think of as complete separation of church and state.
So if you have individual Christians but no Christian community, no congregation as such, that they could then influence the prince to in turn have a congregation?
If Christians in a non-Christian society could have their way, would Luther support their desire to have the government support Christian preaching with its legislation and encouraging the Christian way of life.
Okay, nothing to do with Christian. In einigen Gemeinschaften oder Gesellschaften, die nicht christlich ist, aber mit einzelnen Christen, können sie so Einfluss über der Führer haben, so dass der Predigen und Gemeinde.
Diese Frage war, bestand zu Luthers Zeit nicht, sondern da waren alle Christen.
It's a question that really doesn't come up in Luther's time, because the world at that time is Christian, and you don't find that kind of an area where you only have individual Christians, but generally is run by non-believers.
Da ging es im Wesentlichen darum, diejenigen Dörfer oder Orte, die nicht bereit waren, einen Pfarrer zu bezahlen, dazu zu zwingen, dass sie einen unterhalten.
Yeah, at most what you can say is that there were, in villages where there's a reluctance to pay the preacher, to have preachers and the like, there you can have some compulsion from above, that they pay the man and support his work there. Okay. Don't want to neglect the side
of the room
here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For other people. Okay, in the back.
Some people have commented that Luther in his later life changed his opinion about the thesis that he wrote in Bondage to the Will, of man being totally passive, particularly in the full bottom of election. Do you comment on that, please?
Hat Irving Bogle in der später Luther seine Meinung über die freie Wille geändert hat, sodass man nicht ganz passiv ist, sondern ein aktives Teil, das aufteilen ist. So. Ja. Das ist das Wahre, oder?
Ja, das hängt mit dem zusammen, was ich hier Entfaltung genannt habe.
Ties into what he's tried to explain or elucidate on here this morning.
Luther hat keine systematische Theologie geschrieben, wo er das immer weiter entwickelt und dann vielleicht im Band 4 was gegen Band 1 schreibt.
Yeah, he has no systematic theology that starts simply at one place and continues on, but it's possible later on to find something in Volume 4 that seems to run against Volume 1.
Sondern im Wesentlichen hat er entweder Texte ausgelegt oder Anfragen und Angriffe beantwortet.
Essentially what he does is either take a specific text and have an exegesis of that, or he takes a specific occasion and writes to an incident or an attack made upon him.
Indem Erasmus von Rotterdam den freien Willen des Menschen bei der Erlösung des Menschen betonte, hat Luther ganz konzentriert das den Gegensatz unterstrichen.
Yeah. And in the case with Erasmus, where Erasmus talked highly of free will and so emphasized that, then he swings to the other opposite position and very strongly emphasizes man's inability to do anything, in contrast.
Wenn das aber mit Gemeinde zu tun hat, die gleichgültig und nachlässig ist, dann muss er sie natürlich wieder anders ansprechen.
But when he gets down into a pastoral situation in a community, where he doesn't have this sort of thing that he had from Erasmus, then his way of approaching the problem and explaining the situation could be otherwise.
Und es ist durchaus möglich, dass, wenn man die einzelnen Sätze nur logisch nebeneinander stellt, dann Unterschiede oder auch Gegensätze in den Vordergrund treten.
And it's possible that when you simply take sentences and set them logically one against the other, that you think you see conflicts or in Luther's theology, things where it does not jive, where it does not dovetail.
Und wir müssen eben lernen, diese Aussagen komplex zu sehen und im Zusammenhang mit der jeweiligen Situation.
And you have to see, as he said in his paper, that you have to see the historical context to see exactly what he means in that given situation.
Und ich glaube, dass das auch für uns heute hilfreich ist.
And that's also helpful for us today.
Es kommt ja nicht darauf an, dass wir eine Lehre an sich in einer Zelle uns ausdenken, sondern dass wir das Evangelium in bestimmte geschichtliche Situationen hineinsprechen.
It's not for us simply to think of our theology in a cell, in an ivory tower, we say, but to take it out and think of it and use it in real life situations among people.
Yeah. Martin Luther in seinem Leben, wir haben viel von Entwicklung geredet. In seinem Leben irgendwann eine Lehre oder eine Ansicht von ihm
später hier, früher hat er öffentlich widerrufen oder gesagt, da habe ich dummes Zeug geschrieben. Oder?
The question was, we heard a lot about development this morning. Is there any place specifically in Luther's theology where he later on says, earlier in my life I said this and that, that was a stupid thing to say, and I honestly and openly withdraw that statement?
Luther hatte keine Weimarer Luther-Ausgabe.
He didn't have the Weimar edition of Luther's work.
Ich glaube, er hat nie nachgesehen, was er früher geschrieben hatte.
And he probably never looked back at what he'd earlier written to do that sort of thing.
Und ich wüsste auch keine Stelle, wo er sich ganz ausdrücklich korrigiert.
Yeah, and he doesn't know of any specific place where he expressly says he wants to correct an earlier opinion or an earlier statement.
Es gibt nur einige Stellen, wo er den Fortschritt seiner Erkenntnis in Stufen schildert.
There are only places where he says that his understanding and his knowledge of something has grown or has evolved a bit farther.
Zum Beispiel in der Einleitung zu den Resolutionen zu den 95 Thesen.
For example, in the introduction to the resolution of the 95 Theses, the PC wrote later after the 95.
Schreibt er, wie verschieden er, was er in verschiedenen Stufen unter Buße verstanden hat.
He explains what he understood in the various steps on repentance.
Aber sonst könnte ich mich nicht erinnern, dass er ganz ausdrücklich eine frühere Veröffentlichung korrigiert.
But he can't at the moment think of a place specifically where Luther wanted to correct himself from what he already said.
Höchstens, dass er in den Tischreden manchmal sich noch äußert, dass er in seiner Frühzeit also den Papst nicht richtig erkannt hat oder manches noch nicht richtig eingesehen hat. Aber dass er eine Lehre, die er als reformatorische Erkenntnis verbreitet hat, dann später ausdrücklich erörtert und verändert hat, da kann ich mich nicht erinnern.
There are places in the table talk where, for example, he will say he didn't understand even what the papacy was all about earlier, but that sort of thing is a statement where he doesn't understand the total of the evil that was there. But there's no place where he says of his Reformation doctrine later on that he wants to retreat or change. Professor Tim?
Okay. If I read correctly, recently in American Lutheran magazine, an American Lutheran scholar quoted saying that in the last 2 years of his life, Dr. Luther went to pieces emotionally and indeed was a little bit crazy. And I think in view of that being said in the American scene, it might be useful to ask the professor to respond to that.
It was an American Luther magazine, right?
Er hat neulich
etwas von Roman Bacon gelesen, wo in Bacon steht, dass in den letzten 2 Jahren dieses Leben Luther ein bisschen geisteskrank oder wahnsinnig oder verrückt war. No.
Also zunächst muss man sagen, seitdem Luther verheiratet war, wurde er krank.
First of all, one could say, er war krank?
Wurde er krank?
One could say, first of all, Luther became sick after the time he married, 1525.
Aber das war sicher zufällig.
But that was simply coincidental.
Er hatte also Kopfschmerzen, Nierensteine, Rheuma, Gicht und mehrere Krankheiten.
He was plagued from about that time on by things like headaches, kidney stones, constipation and things you read about, all sorts of ills you read about in his letters and things.
Und dann steht manchmal das Bild, dass der ältere Luther immer kränker und immer unfähiger zum Arbeiten wurde.
Yeah, and you get the impression that the older Luther becomes sicker and sicker and more incompetent or incapable of doing any work.
Luther hat selbst dazu beigetragen zu diesem Bild.
Luther contributes beigetragen.
Ja, dass man das denkt.
Ja. Yeah, he contributes to this picture by things he says, so that one comes to that opinion.
Er schreibt in Briefen: Seit 14 Tagen kann ich nicht lesen und schreiben.
He writes, for example, in letters, that's now 14 days since I've been able to do any reading or writing.
Aber das schreibt er.
But he writes it.
Außerdem hat er schon einige Tage vorher einen Brief geschrieben, der uns erhalten geblieben ist.
Yeah, and beside that, there are letters. There's a letter extant from a couple of days before.
Viele dieser Aussagen Luthers sind Übertreibungen.
Yeah, and many of these expressions of Luther are exaggerations.
Es sind Klagen eines Mannes, der noch mehr arbeiten möchte.
They're the complaint of a man who'd really like to be able to work even harder and more.
Und infolgedessen darf man diese Aussagen Luthers nicht so verallgemeinern.
And therefore one should simply accept these expressions of Luther as being a general picture of the man.
Aber es trifft auch zu, dass er in den 1541 bis 43 kaum noch gepredigt hat.
41 to 10. Yeah, but he also mentions though that between 41 and 43, 1543, he doesn't do kaum, hardly any preaching.
Er ließ sich mit einem Wagen zur Kirche fahren.
In fact, he even lets himself be taken to church in a wagon, so he doesn't have to walk.
Aber die letzten zwei Jahre hat er dann wieder fast jeden Sonntag gepredigt, da ging es ihm wieder besser.
But the last 2 years of his life, he once again is preaching almost every Sunday, so apparently things were going physically better for him.
Auch Mitte der 30er Jahre war er einmal ziemlich behindert am Predigen.
And in the middle of the 30s, he also seemed at times to be hindered in his willingness or intent to preach.
Aber danach hat er wieder Predigten gehalten, dass seine Freunde geschrieben haben, er hätte noch nie so gewaltig gepredigt wie in dieser Zeit.
And yet, these were Schriften von seinen Freunden.
Die Freunde haben dann in Briefen geschrieben, dass Luther noch nie so gut wie.
But friends have written in letters that during that same time Luther had never preached so powerfully as during that era.
Es gibt also ein Auf und Ab in Luthers Arbeitskraft in diesen letzten Jahren.
Mm-hmm. Ja. There is an ebb and flow in Luther's ability to work in these last years.
Und es ist sehr tröstlich, dass er, für den die Predigt so wichtig war, dann die letzten zwei Jahre seines Lebens noch zu predigen konnte.
And it's for us sort of comforting or encouraging that he put so much stock in preaching that he would devote his energy in the last 2 years of his life to preaching. Other questions? Anyone? Okay, and so I can was über die Vorbereitung oder
das will ich kurz machen. Was das
You'll make it very short.
Es streckt sich auf viele Gebiete.
Preparations are going forth in a number of different areas, in many different areas.
Sie wissen vielleicht, dass es ein staatliches Lutherkomitee gibt.
For example, there is a governmental Luther Committee.
Den Vorsitz hat der Staatsratsvorsitzende Honecker selbst übernommen.
And the chairman of this particular committee is the Communist Party chairman, Erich Honecker.
Das verpflichtet alle Verwaltungen, etwas für das Jubiläum zu tun.
And that automatically obligates all the administration to do something for the Jubilee year.
Dazu gehört, dass die Lutherstätten renoviert werden.
That involves the renovating of the Luther sites and cities.
In Wittenberg wird die Schlosskirche renoviert, das Lutherhaus, also die Lutherhalle, neu gemacht und auch die Stadtkirche.
Mm-hmm. So that means, for example, the Castle Church in Wittenberg is being renovated. Wird noch renoviert? Oder ist es schon getan? There is still renovation to be done on the Castle Church. The City Church is being renovated and also what's called the Lutherhalle, Luther's house, the black cloister in which he lived in Wittenberg.
Die Stadtkirche gehört der Kirche und auch die Renovierung wird von der Kirche bezahlt.
The city church belongs to the German church and therefore the German church has to pay for the renovation.
Aber wir haben zu wenig Wohnungen.
But they have too few households, that is to say people. There's not enough ground roots support for that kind of thing.
Und deshalb ist es schwer, Arbeitskräfte zu erhalten, die solche öffentliche Gebäude erneuern.
And therefore it's very hard to muster the resources for this kind of renovation of municipal buildings.
Es genügt also nicht, dass man das Geld hat.
It's not simply a matter of saying we don't have enough money.
Aber weil diese Feiern staatlich so gefördert werden, sind auch Arbeitskräfte da, die Kirche zu erneuern.
Also kommt dann Hilfe von der Stadt.
Ja, diese ganzen Arbeitskräfte werden geplant.
Okay, but because this is also a national of national interest, Also then some of the energies and necessary resources are also being input from the state as well.
In Eisleben wird das Geburtshaus erneuert, das ist schon fast fertig, und auch das Sterbehaus Luthers.
The birth house of Luther in Eisleben is almost now finished with the renovation, and the death house in Eisleben is also being renovated at the moment.
In dem Sterbehaus waren bisher 3 Räume zu sehen, das wird erweitert auf etwa 10 Räume.
To this time, you could go in 3 rooms in the death house, but now after the renovation, you'll be able to go in 10.
In Erfurt wird das Augustinerkloster nach den Schäden des Krieges wieder aufgebaut.
Yeah, and in Erfurt, the Augustinian cloister, where Luther was, is being renovated after the war damage. Yeah.
Ich will das nicht alles aufzählen. Es lohnt sich aber, das zu besuchen.
Yeah, he doesn't want to. There's more he could say. He can't say it all, but it's well worth the visit.
Aber auch die Veröffentlichungen werden sehr unterstützt.
Also the publications for 83 are being supported greatly.
Bei uns wird sowohl die Verteilung des Papiers geplant als auch der Arbeitseinsatz der Druckerei.
For example, the even down to the distribution of the papers, that the paper goes properly to the printing houses, and also the proper number of printing houses are doing the work for the publication. That's all being overseen by the state and managed.
Wenn das Jubiläum derart gefördert wird, dann ist es für uns leichter, dickere Bücher, mehr Exemplare und auch in kürzerer Zeit zu drucken.
Yeah, and it does have the advantage, he says, with the involvement of the state, that it allows them then to print bigger volumes, more volumes, and they get done faster if the state's willing to support that kind of work.
Aber auch nichtkirchliche Verlage veröffentlichen Bücher zum Lutherjubiläum.
Also non-church publishing houses are doing work. Publishing for the Jubilee year.
Der Reklam Verlag druckt die Lutherbibel von 1534 nach.
The Reklam Publishing House is, for example, doing a reprint of the 1534 Luther Bible.
Das ist der erste Bibeldruck in unserem Land von einem nichtkirchlichen Verlag.
That's the first publication of a Bible in East Germany from a non-church publishing house.
Die staatlichen Archive bringen einen starken Band heraus, wo auf einer Seite das Dokument fotografiert ist, auf der anderen Seite der Text übertragen und eine Einleitung.
There's also a volume being done by nichtkirchlich.
Nein, auch nichtkirchlich.
Yeah, also by a municipal, a non-church publishing house, a large volume which will have on one side photographic reproductions of documents from the Reformation time, and on the other side it'll have the text there printed from the manuscript or whatever, and also a little introduction of the text.
Die Deutsche Akademie der Wissenschaften bringt im Akademieverlag einen Band heraus mit Beiträgen zu Luther.
The German Academy of Scholars is also bringing out a volume of essays and contributions to Luther studies.
Die Evangelische Verlagsanstalt.
The Evangelical Publishing House, the Protestant Publishing House.
Verlegt eine Studienausgabe zu Luther in 6 Bänden.
It's putting forth a study edition of Luther's works in 6 volumes.
Ein Band ist erschienen, bis 83 werden es 3 sein.
One volume is already out, and by 83, 3 volumes of the 6 will have appeared.
Es erscheint eine Taschenausgabe von 5 Bänden für die Gemeinde.
And also coming out is a little pocket edition, a smaller 5 volume edition that will be there for congregations.
Darin sind die Luthertexte in die Sprache unserer Zeit übersetzt, also keine frühnorddeutschen Wendungen mehr.
And there will be a reproduction of Luther text, but it will not be in early High German, but in regular modern German as they speak today.
Dann erscheint eine illustrierte Biografie zu Luther.
And there's also going to be an illustrated biography of Luther.
Sie enthält 500 Abbildungen.
With 500 illustrations.
Der Verfasser ist Joachim Rocker, den Sie vielleicht kennen.
Rocker?
Joachim Rocker, ein Reformationshistoriker, der jetzt Präsident der Evangelischen Kirche der Union ist.
Joachim Rocker, who is a Reformation scholar and also president of the Evangelical, the Protestant Lutheran German Church in East Germany, is the one who's doing that volume.
Dann erscheint diese Festschrift, die ich hier kurz erwähnt habe, die 2 Bände umfassen wird.
Yeah, and the Festschrift that he mentioned in his paper is also going to appear. That'll be a 2-volume Festschrift.
Es ist noch einiges mehr.
Yeah, and those are some of the things, and there's much more.
Dann wird es wissenschaftliche Veranstaltungen geben.
And there are also going to be scholarly gatherings, conferences, and meetings.
Der Internationale Luther-Forschungskongress tagt in Erfurt.
The International Luther Congress meets in Erfurt.
Und die Deutsche Akademie der Wissenschaften wird wahrscheinlich eine Tagung in Halle machen. Das weiß ich noch nicht.
Yeah, and the German Academy of Scholars will meet perhaps in Halle.
Außerdem wird es 7 Kirchentage geben.
And there will also be 7 church synods or gatherings, church meetings.
Wo dann jeweils auch Gegenstände bearbeitet werden, die mit Luther zusammenhängen.
And they're also going to be doing work in those 7 church gatherings on Luther's theology and things to do with Luther and Reformation.
Das ist vielleicht das Wichtigste.
No,
would you comment on why the government is so interested in the Luther celebration?
Warum hat die Regierung Interesse für Luther?
Ich antworte zunächst mit der Frage meines ältesten Sohnes.
He is answering, but the question his oldest son has asked.
Er sagt manchmal zu mir, kannst du mich nicht etwas Leichteres fragen?
Yeah, can't you ask me something easier? Okay.
Ich weiß es nicht.
Yeah, he's not sure.
Aber es gehört in einen Rahmen hinein, wo die ganze Kulturpolitik überhaupt weiter geworden ist in unserem Land.
There are a variety of reasons, but in general there is a cultural political interest also within.
Und das streckt sich nicht nur auf Luther.
Yeah, and that includes not simply Luther, but a general political social consciousness they're trying to develop. Okay.
Again, we thank you, Dr. Johann.
Yes.